Hey everybody, welcome again to F This Movie. My name is Patrick Bromley, and I'm joined tonight for a discussion of the remake of RoboCop by Mark Ahn.
How's it going, everybody?
We did the original RoboCop last year sometime.
I don't remember.
And so it made sense to do the remake, and we recognize that usually when we do a new release film, we do it, you know, the week it comes out. This ended up getting overshadowed by F This Movie Fest a couple weeks ago. It had the misfortune of coming out the same weekend as F This Movie Fest, and then we just couldn't get around to seeing it last week. So it's pushed a couple weeks, but you're all dying to hear what we thought of the remake of RoboCop, right?
It's still in theaters.
It is.
We're still relevant.
Just barely.
Yeah.
Remember, you can always find our website at fthismovie.net. You should follow us on Twitter. We are at fthismovie. Like our Facebook page if you haven't already, and you can email us at fthismoviepodcast@gmail.com. We're also available in the iTunes store, and if you're a fan and you enjoy the show, please take the time to leave a star rating, a review, whatever you like. And you can find us at dvdverdict.com by clicking the podcast tab. Thank you to Michael Staley and everybody at DVD Verdict for hosting our show once a week. I think that's it. There are so many ways you can find us.
Yeah. I want to welcome, I like doing this, especially after every F This Movie Fest. I want to welcome new people who have found us.
Because
I think we've been talking about how, aside from just the international flavor of our community, but also just that there's new people. So welcome to everybody. Maybe this is your first show or your second show or your third show or whatever. But
do you feel a little bit like these new microphones make us sound a little bit like NPR? Like, should we keep everything? Because sometimes our show used to get kind of lively, but I feel like now we should just keep everything.
Well, so it's like a we're commentating a golf match.
Like,
oh, it's a useful show.
So when
it's
Jackie useful. Earl Haley says, "I won't buy that for a dollar,"
well, actually, no.
Did you want to kill yourself?
Wasn't on the
because
commentary.
I definitely I did. Anyway, so we're going to talk about RoboCop 2012, I guess spoiler-free for a while, and then we might get into spoilers if necessary, but chances are you haven't seen it yet. I don't think a lot of people have. But before we do that, Mark, have you seen anything good lately?
I have. There's two things I want to bring up. First one is the Lego Movie, which
it is.
Yeah, it's a good time. I saw that about a couple weeks ago. I know you guys, a couple people have talked about it already on the podcast. It's a blast, everybody. It's still
fun,
going,
right?
Yeah. It's kind of one of those fun for all ages kind of thing. Lots of
the definition of a pleasant surprise.
Yeah. I didn't expect anything about it. I remember seeing the trailer when it came out, and I thought I felt kind of stupid. It's like one of those things where you don't want to tell other people, but you're like, that's kind of cool. I want to watch that. So I didn't kind of mention it to people around me because I was like, well, I don't want to be like the idiot who's like, let's go see the Lego Movie.
I had the same feeling when I saw the trailer, and I had the excuse of I could like hide behind my kid and just be like, well, I'll take him to see
How
it.
How dare you?
Yeah, but I thought the trailer looked kind of good if overly busy. Like,
sure.
It made me nervous that it was going to give me a seizure because the music is very loud and the cutting is very fast. And so I was nervous that the movie was going to be sort of frantic. And I don't think it is. I mean, I think it definitely moves at a speed more like even Scott Pilgrim or like sort of one of those newer movies.
Yeah, it's but heightened.
It is heightened, but it didn't give me ADD.
Yeah. It was, I know it's still out, still right. It's still playing.
It's clean and up.
Yeah. So those of you who haven't seen it, I think it's kind of worth, I think it's worth watching.
Yeah,
it's
definitely.
Take your kid. You took Charlie. Right?
I did.
Yeah. So that was a good
There's
time.
A good chance it will win best animated feature next year.
Nice.
So you might as well get in on that now.
Yeah.
Because it made a bunch of money and they like to reward success.
Yeah. Who are the name of the guys who made it again?
I might get these.
Is it Chris Hill
It's Chris Lord and Phil Miller, or Phil Lord and Chris Miller.
Oh.
I know it's a Lord and a Miller and a Chris and a Phil, but I don't know which names belong to who.
Yeah, I remember that Lord and the Miller. We'll just go with that last name.
Yeah, Lord and Miller. It's a Lord and Miller joint.
Yeah. I know that they did 21 Jump Street, and they're doing the sequel 22 Jump Street and stuff.
Yes.
I remember reading somewhere somebody said something about like, hey, they're kind of just taking these properties that were kind of like, oh, what do you do with those, and sort of made it really entertaining and fun. So
Phil Lord and Chris Miller.
Sorry, Mrs. Miller and Mrs. Lord for that. We
Please,
got it right
it's
though.
Ms. Lord.
it's
Mr. Lord is out of the picture.
It's 2014. Is there a Mr. No. but it's like I like what they're kind of doing, what they're trying to do. Like they're trying to be. I think I remember you mentioned earlier talking about it that they're just still trying to be funny, even.
Yeah.
the end of the movie when maybe you don't have to. But
right.
I really enjoyed it. It's a really good time.
Yeah. So. Awesome.
Encourage people to see it. The other one I wanted to mention was, I just saw Philomena.
Okay.
I know that's a movie from like last year. Sorry, everybody. And we're in 2014.
I still haven't seen it. So you're still ahead of me.
Oh, nice. Okay. I think we've talked about before of how like some movies look like
work.
No. Well, we have talked about that. That's not kind of where I was going exactly. I think it was more like, it's like, these are movies my parents should see.
Yes, right.
And so that was my initial distaste for like, well, you know, I don't need to go out and see this right this second, you know, that kind of stuff. So I think that's kind of
why
I'm
watching it.
It's
almost anything with Judi Dench that isn't James Bond. It's kind of how true. I feel. Like, this isn't the movie for me.
Wait, you don't want to see Notes on a Scandal? Like, I don't get it.
I did see Notes on a Scandal,
I didn't
actually
see it. Yeah. You know,
Kate Blanchett is in that, so that's my excuse.
Well, that's why I didn't see it, because Judi Dench was in it.
And not James Bond.
Excuse me, Dame Judi Dench.
Yes, please.
And so it felt like something my parents would go watch. And I'm actually, what's funny is that I'm actually going to tell my parents to see it. It was really good.
Does it matter that my parents are divorced?
No, they don't have to see it together.
Okay, good.
They could see it in a divorced
separately.
Way.
Okay,
sure, that's fine. But it was really fun. I didn't realize, maybe probably because of my general like sort of disregard of everything, I didn't realize that Steve Coogan was in it.
Yeah,
I feel really stupid for saying that. Like, he's on the poster and everything. So I think it ended up being what could be it's a pretty serious movie in terms of the story, but there's enough levity in it, and that's, I'm assuming that's Steve Coogan's doing because he's kind of a funny guy, to make it like not feel quite as oppressive and sort of awful as it could have been. But it's really good. I had a great time. It was great. Judi Dench is
what was
great.
It that prompted you to finally go see it? Was it the Best Picture nomination? Were you like kind of trying to catch up on everything?
Sure, a little bit. That was part of it. It was like one of the ones I just hadn't seen. I'd seen most of them. Yeah. I was lucky enough to get around to them in December. But
I might be confused here. Philomena is entirely animated with Legos, right?
No, that's
the
Persepolis, right?
The Lego mom has her, the Lego nun has her Lego baby taken away or something. I can't remember exactly what it is.
But the Lego nun has a Lego baby.
She's all like, Lego my baby.
Right, and then she's
Catholic
like,
Church.
Right, and then she's like, I only work with black pieces or very dark gray. Because I'm a nun. I don't know where
Bat
this is
nun.
Going. Bat nun. No, it was good. I think I went to go see it just because it's like February, so it's sort of
it
a
is
slower.
Definitely February.
It's February. It's, yeah. So there wasn't as much stuff just sort of out, and I was like, you know, that's still out, and that's still a good movie. I want to go see something good. And so it was a little bit more appealing than anything
else. It
was
this
was
or
out.
The remake of RoboCop, and so...
well, I saw that too. So,
the weekend that the RoboCop remake came out, the other movies released were the remake of Endless Love and the remake of About Last Night. So good job, February. One for Philomena, please.
See you later. Goodbye, February.
I'm going to burn through four movies.
Oh, yeah, let's
quickly.
Do it. Speed round.
I'll go, I guess, in like chronological order. The first one I saw was I Married a Witch from 1942.
Oh.
Criterion last week had their flash sale, and I took advantage of it a little bit and blind bought I Married a Witch because I dig Veronica Lake. It's Veronica Lake and Frederick March.
Okay.
Renee Clair directed the movie. She's a witch. He marries her. The title kind of gives a lot of it away.
Okay. Six snakes on a plane.
Sort of, yeah.
Sure.
Fewer snakes, more witches. Super cute though, and like Veronica Lake is just holy cow. So great and adorable. And I will always carry goodwill for Frederick March because of his Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. So it's really an adorable movie, and I really liked all of the... There's a ton of special effects in it, but it's 1942, and so they're like 1942 special effects, but I love the way that they sort of problem solve a lot of those and create, the Jean Cocteau Beauty and the Beast is the king of that for me, just the handmade special effects. This movie does a lot of that, and it's adorable, and it turns out I will see any movie with Veronica Lake, including L.A. Confidential, where Kim Basinger just sort of looks like Veronica Lake, but she's got nothing on Veronica Lake.
Such a strong love for Veronica Lake.
Well, yeah. I call her Ronnie. Ronnie
Lake. We should do a Ronnie Lake podcast.
I like where your head is at.
All right.
Then I saw a crazy movie. It's called White of the Eye. It's from 1987. It's directed by Donald Camel. I don't know. He made a performance.
Sorry, Mrs. Camel.
It's this crazy, like, American giallo movie with David Keith and Kathy Moriarty, and it's nuts. I don't even know how to describe it. I know it's coming out on Blu-ray in the UK in, like, March. I don't want to give anything away, but it's a crazy, crazy movie. I didn't even totally like it because I'm not the world's biggest giallo fan. If you don't know what giallo is, it's like the sort of slasher mysteries that Dario Argento used to make. Sure. He's sort of most famous for those in the 70s and right. Mario Bava. It's this weird Americanized version of that, and it's a crazy movie. I wish I could say more about it, but I feel like I would be spoiling things.
Does it feel like Italian horror? Because you mentioned
yes and no at parts, okay. And then it gets the rest wrong. It's that weird. I don't know. It's like a weird cover version that screws things up, which you know we'll be talking about again shortly. And then I saw two newer movies that are both available on Netflix Instant. The first is Bad Milo, the movie where Ken Marino has a monster that lives in his butt and comes out when he gets stressed out.
That sounds like my life.
Should be like super funny, so many good people involved, and you know, a funny enough premise and a cool little practical monster puppet that recalls, you know, like Basket Case and some of the stuff from the 80s that I really like. Super disappointing. Yeah, just really a letdown. Not funny in the way that I want it to be, not even like gory in a way that's over the top and then sure. becomes funny. I mean, it's like it has a ridiculous premise. Obviously, he has a monster in his butt.
Yeah.
And then they kind of stopped there, I feel like. They felt like...
That's the punchline.
Yeah, right. And so they didn't necessarily try and expound on that. And so that was disappointing. And then the last thing I watched is also on Netflix. It's called Violet and Daisy.
I have not heard of this.
Saoirse Ronan. Am I saying that right?
I think so. I'm Irish.
And Alexis Bledel.
Yeah.
It was directed by Jeffrey Fletcher, who won an Oscar for writing Precious, based on the novel Push by Sapphire. It's Alexis Bledel and Saoirse Ronan and James Gandolfini in one of his final performances. They play teenage hit girls, hitmen, assassins.
I remember watching a trailer for
Who are supposed to kill James Gandolfini. And Gandolfini, as always, just does not phone it in. And sure. gives this great, tragic, sad performance. And it has all these interesting things, but it just never... It never comes together. And I'm just... I'm really tired of the... Between, like, Hannah and Hit Girl from Kick-Ass.
Sure.
And Hailee Steinfeld has one coming out where she plays a young assassin. Just
right.
too many, like, teenage girl assassin movies.
What's funny is that Saoirse Ronan also played Hannah.
Yeah, right.
So you would feel like she would yeah. know what she's doing.
Like, they're obsessed with this pop singer, but that never goes... Barbie Sunday, I think, is the name, but it never really goes anywhere. They have weird secret handshakes. Like, it keeps trying to draw this distinction between, like, they're so young and innocent. They're such teenage girls. Oh, but they also kill people, and isn't that crazy? And it's super stylized, and I remember seeing the trailer and thinking it looked really interesting
sure.
and wanting to see it, and... Yeah, no, not very good.
So you're saying it's Domino?
maybe, yeah.
What would you rather see? Would you rather see Violet and Daisy again or Domino?
If
death
forced,
is not an option.
If forced right now, at gunpoint, Domino.
Okay.
Because there's things in Domino that I like. And yeah, not that like Violet and Daisy too. Is awful, but I don't know. Domino also gives me a headache, and I don't feel like Violet and Daisy did.
Hmm.
I'm still going Domino. Okay. Still going Domino,
I think
everyone.
I would, too.
Yeah?
I like I actually have some love for Domino. Not that it's great, but
we did a
like
podcast
it.
On it in the very ago, early yeah. days. Yeah. And I don't even remember what I said, except probably like, I like this and I shouldn't.
Yeah.
Sounds
good.
So yeah, of those four, gosh, I Married a Witch, I think, is the only one that I can
Ronnie Lake.
Recommend. Ronnie Lake, my gal.
Why can you say no?
So let's unfortunately talk about the RoboCop remake. And I say unfortunately, even though I don't think this is the worst movie.
I would agree with you.
Yeah. Like, I'm opposed to the idea of remaking RoboCop on principle.
Yeah.
Because I think the original is a masterpiece. I think it's so, so great. And I think so much of what makes it so great has to do with the choices that Paul Verhoeven made. And so I feel like if you give it to somebody else, what you're going to do is take that story and just strip it of its personality.
Yeah.
And that's not exactly what happened. Have you seen the Elite Squad movies? I haven't.
I saw the second
That's
one.
The one that's on Netflix, right?
That's the one that put the director of Jose this Padilla. Movie. Jose Padilla or something like that. I'm not Brazilian. I'm not Portuguese, everybody.
You're Irish. You already established that.
I know. Sure, it's a Ronin. So I saw that one, and that's kind of... Hold on. And so that was, I remember when we had, when we did the RoboCop, the original, we did that podcast. I remember we were talking about the remake, and yeah. I remember right around that time is when I saw the Elite Squad movies.
Oh, okay.
And I really liked it. I thought, you know what? Here's a guy who, in the one Elite Squad movie I saw, I don't know what the other one's about. There is some of that, political, government, like this sort of suspicion of government activities and of large corporations, that kind of thing that you see in the original RoboCop.
Right.
So I thought, you know what, maybe this guy has a hand, he has a handle on this. Maybe he'll be able to sort of bring that to the remake. So I was kind of hopeful.
I think he tries. Like, here's the thing. My complaint about most remakes, and again, I'm not opposed to the idea of remaking movies because there's just been too many good ones to say that remakes are a bad idea. So even though I feel like, oh gosh, remaking RoboCop is bad on paper, I'll give it a shot. My issue with so many remakes is that they just literally redo the original movie beat for beat. They update some of the actors. They might try and do one or two things differently to claim they put their spin on it. But you look at the remake of like Total Recall, there's things about it that are different.
Right.
Most of the changes are bad, and that movie constantly bends over backwards to remind you of the original movie, which is a terrible idea, especially when you are inferior and soulless. This RoboCop doesn't, with the exception of the theme music that plays once or twice and that awful Jackie Earl Haley reference where he says, I wouldn't buy that for a dollar.
He had to.
Oh, just leave it out, everyone. There aren't like all these cute callbacks to the original film.
Yeah.
And so it avoids doing what I always criticize remakes of doing. It does at least try to be its own thing.
Yeah.
Which I respect. Having said that, I don't think the thing that it ends up being is very good.
Yeah. I would agree. I would say that I think I ended up landing in around the same place you did with it. That I felt like going in that. Obviously, you couldn't. I was like, okay, they're not. No one's dumb enough. Well, maybe I shouldn't say this. That no one's dumb enough to make like a shot for shot, bit for bit remake of the original. Like that's just not gonna work. Like that the original was a little just too weird and strange, and just it had all these weird, not weird, but like a tone that was really difficult to kind of like recreate.
It'd be
really
difficult. Impossible to recreate.
Especially if like. Especially impossible to remake for someone who has the thought of, you know what, I'm going to remake RoboCop.
Right.
That person does not have the ability to recreate that tone.
Right.
So I thought, okay, well, that's fine. You can still make this movie work, but it's got to just be its own thing and has to commit to being totally different from the previous thing, which is fine, like you were saying. But the other problem is that it's not, this movie is not just competing against the original, but it's also competing against every other movie that has a guy in a metal suit in it.
Sure.
And so you had to kind of avoid like all of those things too.
Right.
And so I just kind of felt like there was just so many things that it was trying to, like there were so many pitfalls for it. There's so many potential landmines that it just sort of ended up being, and I think it tried. I think it made an attempt to sort of be its own thing. But I think at the end, it just sort of it just doesn't all work. It just doesn't all kind of add up. And it ends up being okay. It's all right. Mm. But that's kind of...
We kind of hinted on this at this last week on the show that I did with JB, because I had sort of already formulated an opinion and said that, you know, my biggest problem with the RoboCop remake is that it is a different movie every 15 to 20 minutes.
Okay.
And so it's almost a movie that's competing with itself, because even if you get on board for 20 minutes and you're like, oh, okay, this is kind of clicking.
Sure.
It turns into something else again. And then that thing will often be less interesting, and B, it ruins the thing that came before. So the first, These are some generalized plot outlines. I don't consider these a spoiler, but if you literally want to know nothing about what they change in the RoboCop remake, I guess tune out now. But also probably don't see the RoboCop remake and just watch the original again.
Sure.
The first 10 or 15 minutes are kind of interesting, and you see that he has this political agenda where we're in this war-torn country. But I don't remember.
I think it's Iran.
Okay.
Because it says Tehran on the...
Oh, okay.
I think it says
I couldn't remember. The thing is, we saw this movie 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
And what they're trying to demonstrate is that the world police is now these American machines that this corporation has built. And so they've put robots in to police other countries. And things go sort of disastrously wrong. And this corporation is trying to make the argument that we should do this here at home. But the government is saying, no, we're not comfortable with that. And so RoboCop is this attempt to bridge the two things, that we're trying to have robot police, you know, totally robotic police, but people aren't comfortable with that because they feel like the robot doesn't have a soul. It can't make a choice.
Right.
It can't decide not to, you know, shoot and kill a kid who might pose a threat. Whereas a person can. So their solution is to try and combine the two. And as Michael Keaton says in the trailer, put a man in the suit. Interesting sort of rethinking of that material. And I'm okay with that. The part of the problem is that then, A, it doesn't always stick to that. And it turns into four other movies before it's over. And B, it ends up being a lot of sort of people sitting around tables discussing the morality of what they're doing and, well, can we get away with this and let's redesign this. And I don't remember if I said this on the podcast or not. I feel like I did, but there's a sequence in the original RoboCop where they're basically building RoboCop and it's all done from his point of view.
Right.
And it's just looking out at all the scientists and doctors. You hear drill sounds and then they're having a New Year's Eve party and... it's great. It happens very quickly. It's a little bit of exposition. This movie takes that and stretches it out to about an hour. So the process of building RoboCop is like an hour long.
Right. We need to find the right guy.
Right.
We need to see how it test markets.
Right.
Yeah.
And the major change I would say that they made is that in the original, Alex Murphy is a guy who is murdered by some villains and they turn him into RoboCop. And then he's just a Frankenstein. He's a robot. Alex Murphy essentially ceases to exist. And by the end of the film, you know, he's kind of come back. You know, there's a little piece of himself that we see is still alive. And that's the arc of that movie. The major change here is that Alex Murphy remains Alex Murphy the whole time. He's very aware of what's going on inside of him, and he knows that he's been put inside of this machine, and that's the only thing that's keeping him alive.
Sure.
And so it's a lot of, like, existential, like, what am I? Am I man or machine?
Right. But it's not even from, well, spoilers? I don't know if it's a spoiler or not, but it's not necessarily from... his point of view. It's not like him necessarily, he does it a little bit, of him considering the nature of his own existence. I feel like it's all these other, his handlers, these corporate people, these scientists, it's them talking about it, and he's just like, there.
Right. It's how do we get him to agree to this? How do we get his wife to agree to this? But you're absolutely right. The movie that I'm describing is very different from the original RoboCop.
Totally.
But they don't even stick with that. It's not even told from Murphy's point of view about a guy who gets put inside a machine and has to decide the future he wants. You're absolutely right. Yeah. It's still outside people making decisions for him. That's not interesting drama.
Mm-hmm.
We need a hero who has agency and free will. And I understand, you know, part of the point they're making is stripping away the illusion of free will, as Gary Oldman says. But yeah, it essentially comes down to a scientist and a businessman deciding the fate of another guy for about 2 hours.
Which could be compelling.
Right. Well, that's this movie, like every 20 minutes. It's like, oh, that could be something, but it just, they don't see it through ever.
Yeah, it just doesn't go all the way. And in that way, this movie especially feels like it's very, there's a lot of fingerprints on it.
Yes.
A lot of people, a lot of you know, people had their say on, no, you should do it like this, and no, right. you should do it like this. And I just feel bad because I would sort, if that's the truth, and I've been sort of reading that that is, then I kind of wish that Jose Padilla, whatever his name is, I'm not going to get it right. I'm going to say his name 13 different times. It's fine. Jose Padilla would have had a chance to sort of make the movie that he sort of wanted to. Well, it would have been nice. I'm wondering what that would have been. Anyway.
Right. And I promise you that even if it was terrible, it would have been more interesting than this.
Yeah.
This is the problem with all these remakes, because they are intellectual properties and they are not art anymore. Sure. They are just a brand. And so studios are very protective of that brand mm-hmm. because they're trying to move a product, not necessarily see an author's vision. And so you always get too many fingerprints on sure. these remakes, because you have a director who maybe has an agenda and wants to do this thing, but then you have a studio that says, no, you can't, because you can't mess with the RoboCop brand.
Right.
And so...
Which they don't necessarily understand what the brand is.
No, they definitely anyway. Don't. And that's right. Well, that's the problem when you get all these studio people involved. But when you think about, you know, the remakes that work, they're typically the ones where the filmmaker was left... alone
yeah.
to make his or her version
yeah.
of this movie.
Like, we trusted you to do this.
Right.
Go, that's why we hired you.
Exactly. But that doesn't happen anymore. But when right. you think about, you know, a lot of the more successful like horror remakes of the 80s, it's very much that filmmaker's vision of right. this property. It's not a studio coming in. Look at even, you know, the Rob Zombie remake of Halloween is a great example, because you have half the movie is Rob Zombie's. Here's what we hired him to do. And half of it is... studio people at Miramax saying, no, it's got to be more like the original. So you get this movie that's sure. half and half. It's half his and half studio notes. And then he gets to make Halloween 2, and he very much makes his own movie, mm-hmm. love it or hate it. I think we can all agree that, well, it's more interesting because at least right. it's the work of this one guy.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, I totally agree. Had they left him alone to just make his movie, again, it could have been way worse. Who sure. knows? I right. don't think it would have been, but it could have been way worse, but I would have been so much more interested in that version of the movie.
Yeah. Two things. I wonder how much, because I would be interested in the way that Padilla would have made it, because you get from this movie, it's really hard to tell like how much he loves the original material, right? It's just sort of hard to tell.
He's not overly precious about it.
Sure.
Which I guess is good. I mean, he doesn't seem to... He doesn't dislike it. You know what I mean?
Right,
it's
yeah.
He's not making it this thing that's just out of reverence, like, right. oh, I'm just going to make this slavish ode to the original's right. awesomeness. He, again, tries to yeah. make his own thing.
Yeah, I would love to see how much he was sort of at the level of his investment in the original material. Not because he needs to make a slavish remake, like,
right,
you know,
right.
but just, oh, you know, that'd be cool. That's what's cool about those remakes, like you were saying. Like, those people have... a relationship with the original material, and they sort of like it enough to like make it their own thing without sort of totally right. ruining the original.
Or as so many, and I'm sorry to interrupt,
no.
as so many people point out, or they don't like the original at all, and they see this as an opportunity to take what they might have seen as a great idea
sure.
that was badly executed
mm-hmm.
and execute it properly. Because right. again, so many people say, why do they keep remaking great movies? Why are they remaking RoboCop?
Sure.
Take something that had a good idea and sucked
yeah.
and remake that. If you're, right. you know, try and get it right. They already got RoboCop right. There's sure. no reason to try and yeah. do RoboCop again.
Right.
Anyway, you were saying.
No, it makes sense. But then again, that thing that you're talking about of someone of hating the original material, that's like a fruitful artistic experience. Like
right.
that person
right.
could be like, you know what? I can make this better. Awesome.
Right.
I would love everybody who creates something to be that motivated to make something
right.
like pretty awesome.
Yes.
The other thing too, I wanted to mention was that just watching Elite Squad. I think it's the second Elite Squad that's on Netflix. It just doesn't seem like that movie isn't this sort of I don't want to say that this movie is soulless necessarily. I don't know if I want to go that far, but there's something kind of generic
yeah.
about it
yeah.
and nothing about that movie nothing about Elite Squad was generic. Mm-hmm. Like there, it was, I would say that it's intense, that there was some interesting like character pieces, and there was some background story to the main character is a police officer. And so you get to see stuff about his home life, and you get to see things about like how he does all this stuff. And you get to see how, you know, his superiors and these government officials were trying to influence this one police officer. So there's a lot of like, there's a lot of ability there. There right. looks like there's a lot going right. on that he can handle, like a bunch of plates sort of spinning all at once. And it just felt like a lot of that energy, whatever that was, didn't really transfer over into right. this movie. And especially, and it sort of worries me because this movie, RoboCop, isn't super, super different from what he had made before. So it kind of made me sad that sort of the energy of that, of Elite Squad kind of just didn't make it to here.
Well, and it almost sounds, and again, I haven't seen the Elite Squad movies, but it almost sounds, in the way that you're sort of describing it, it sounds like he did try to carry some of that over.
Yeah.
And then just sort of graft robots onto it, but never sure. really...
Yeah.
The robot, that angle never really has any justification for being, if he's going to do the Elite Squad stuff, and if he's going to do the robot stuff, then the Elite Squad stuff doesn't belong in the movie.
Right.
It's a movie that sort of tries to service far too many things. Look yeah. at the Abbie Cornish character, who has yeah. nothing to do the entire movie except be sort of glassy-eyed and be on the verge of crying.
And never smile.
Right, that her only direction was, in this scene, you're about to cry. The movie never knows what to do with her, and again, she exists as sort of this placeholder to show, you right. know, Alex Murphy's old life and what he stands to lose.
He's a human being.
Right.
He feels.
Right. And the way that the script eventually just requires her to show up when it's convenient and to be around in order to be in danger if need be, it's you know, insulting. But it can't decide what to do with certain aspects of the movie. And I tried so hard not to sit there and just say, oh, but you're not this and you're not mm-hmm. this. And RoboCop was this and this and this. RoboCop has that great, fun comic book energy.
Right.
RoboCop, the original, has great action stuff in it. And it has that crazy, over-the-top violence, which I'm not saying this movie needs, although this is a tangent.
Right.
This movie's PG-13. And I take issue with that for a lot of reasons.
I forgot about that.
Right. It's, and people were outraged when they heard that because, again, the violence is so tied to the original RoboCop that everybody sure. thought was, well, how can they make a PG-13 RoboCop? I never sat there feeling like this movie had its balls cut off. You know, it wasn't like when the first, which one was that? The Die Hard sequel. Live Free or Die Hard.
Yeah.
The first one that was PG-13 where they sure. cut away before he can say yippee-ki-yay, motherfucker. Right. You're like, oh, this is garbage. However, it's still an incredibly violent movie. Tons yeah. of people are shot and killed. It's just a weird, generic, bloodless violence. And I would argue that in the Verhoeven version, at least that shows you the effects of guns. You know,
sure.
it's awful and it goes so far over the top, but at least there's sort of consequences to that violence. This movie is just you fall down and you disappear out of the frame. So it's this bloodless thing. And this movie has an image that to me is 10 times more disturbing than anything in the original RoboCop.
Oh, I think I know what you're talking about.
It's at one, again, I don't think this is a spoiler, but maybe it is. At one point, all of the robotics are removed and you get to see sort of what's left of the original Alex Murphy.
Yes.
And it's incredibly disturbing.
Yeah.
It's awful to look at.
It is horrible.
It will haunt my nightmares. Yeah. And the camera holds on it for like a really long time. And it's in yeah. a really brightly lit room. Yeah. And it just keeps going. Yeah. And then later
Gary
in the movie,
Oldman has a conversation
right.
with him. And
then later yeah. in the movie, they show it again. Yeah. And there's even a moment in that scene where he says, I don't ever want to see myself like this again. I don't ever want my wife to see me like this again. Okay, fine.
Yeah.
That never pays off.
Nope.
It's just another throwaway idea. You assume when sure. that happens that either he or his wife will see him
maybe.
Like that. And that
smoking
would be
gun.
Drum exactly.
No.
If there's an exposed lung in the first act, you have to, I forget yeah. how the saying goes, but I don't even remember where I was going with it. Just that the comic book and the violence,
yeah.
all of those things are very much in the DNA of the original RoboCop. And I tried to sit there and say, okay, you know, I can't just sit there and say, hey, where's the comic book energy? Where's the
sure.
fun? Where's the satire? Where's the black humor? You know, all of those things that make the first one so special. All of them are absent in this one. Now, I can't fault the movie for not having those things as long as it succeeds on its own. But I would argue it doesn't replace those with anything interesting, you know?
I think all the violence in the first movie ends up in the original, I'll say the original, more has to do with, it's always aimed at innocence, right? Because that's sort of what's horrible about the fact that there are machines out there that could actually do some harm. It's going to harm, that's like the ultimate fear, right? That machines will harm innocent people. Oh my gosh.
Because they can't be reasoned with. Again, it's that scene that got cut up by the MPA, the guy at the board meeting.
Right.
You have 10 seconds to comply at 209.
That's how one of my nightmares starts.
And he can't be reasoned with. And the guy gets shot 1,000 times.
And that's what's horrible about it. Right. And it's just not even like machine to human violence, but it's just also like just the bad guys are so bad.
They just don't care.
They'll just, you know, mercilessly kill anybody in their way. And in this movie, in the remake, it's just the violence is just, it's machine against machine.
Right.
Right. And so you get this whole, I know JB talks about this all the time, of like CGI characters fighting other CGI characters. And then it just becomes not very interesting.
Right. There are essentially two large action beats in this movie. And that's one of its problems, I think, is that if you're going to be a RoboCop movie, like you probably need to have some action. And it's only because you have the words robot and cop in your title, and those sort of suggest some action.
Sure.
Typically, movies that involve those two things have action, except for maybe AI. there's two extended action sequences. That's it. Again, it's otherwise it's people sitting around tables talking to each other. And those action sequences, like you said, I keep hitting the mic stand. I'm sorry. Those action sequences, like you said, are RoboCop versus a bunch of drones.
Yeah.
And so they're robots.
So nobody cares.
Exactly. It's all just CGI nonsense.
There's nothing at stake. I think that, I don't know. Should we switch gears a little bit?
Sure.
Let's talk about things that actually worked. Things that we liked.
All right.
Okay. Should I go first? I'll go first.
Sure, because I'm having a hard time coming up with any.
Okay. I liked Michael Keaton.
I liked Michael Keaton for 2/3 of the movie.
Okay. I liked Michael Keaton because he is playing, he's sort of the only, is this right? Yeah, I think so. He's the only person with a pulse.
Okay.
Right? Like, it's not necessarily a great character. It's not necessarily a great, like, whatever.
Yeah.
But he's got a pulse. Like, he's trying to do something. He's got some life. He's got some motivation. He's got something. And it seems like he's the only person who's sort of having fun at all.
I think he's the only one who's having fun, but that's because Joel Kinnaman is in this weird, tortured movie where he's just sad all the time. And Gary Oldman, I actually thought, was okay.
Yeah.
But again, he's also in a different movie than Michael Keaton. Michael Keaton is in his own fun movie.
Yeah. Can we talk about how there's a lot of names in this movie? There's like a lot, like Jay Baruchel, which I don't know.
Yeah.
What's he doing in this movie? Is he necessary in this? Not that I didn't have a problem with what he was doing or his character necessarily, but why does he need to be in this movie?
Right.
Gary Oldman, a really big name in this movie.
Right.
Really big guy.
Well, that was the thing when they were talking about the remake, is that every couple of weeks you would get this new casting announcement of somebody who just seemed wildly overqualified to appear in the RoboCop remake.
Kind of.
And it felt like for the longest time, well, this is maybe shaping up to be something.
Right.
And even the first, I don't remember if it was the first or second trailer, one of the trailers, which really sort of highlighted the action, and it turns out showed all of the action that's in the movie.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, I'm going to go see that. That has my interest enough that I can overlook the fact that it's a remake of one of my favorite movies ever.
I liked the, speaking else about, additionally about casting, Alex Murphy and his partner in the movie
Omar.
There's a part where it's like before he becomes RoboCop. They're just doing like normal partner cop stuff, and I was like,
I would watch that movie.
That's cool. That's fun. What are they doing?
That's
they're
the thing.
Doing some stuff.
I would watch the Omar and Joel Kinnaman movie where they're just cops.
Right.
Because that was better than when one of them becomes a robot. Because at that point, the movie has no idea what to do with Omar.
No.
And so many of the characters seem to be in the movie again because there was a counterpart in the original. So in the original, he had a partner, Lewis. So in this movie, he has a partner, Lewis. They have no idea what to do with Lewis. In the original, there was a Clarence Boddicker. So this movie has a stand-in for Clarence Boddicker.
Sure.
No idea what to do with him. In the original, it had Dick Jones. So they have the counterpart to Dick Jones. barely know what to do with him, but maybe we'll talk about that more in spoilers. Sure. And then on top of that, they add in all these other characters, like his wife, like his kid, like Gary Oldman, like Gary Oldman's assistant, right, like Jay Baruchel, the marketing guy, like the other woman.
Who is the marketing
who
other.
Has maybe the most groan-worthy line in the movie, where she says something about, like what, a soul? As though we weren't all already thinking it, this movie doesn't trust you to fill in the blanks. So she just flat out says, a soul.
We're like, take it easy, Meryl Streep light. Simmer down. Jeez. Tuck away your upper lip. Give me a break.
Her every line delivery to me was problematic. And she's not a bad actress, but I was not a fan of her in this movie. I will say, Abbey Cornish had no part to play. And anytime she showed up on screen was just on the verge of crying.
Yep.
However, and this is very shallow,
that's okay.
I've seen Abbey Cornish in other stuff.
Sure.
She's never quite caught my fancy. I thought she was so pretty in this movie that I didn't mind when she was on screen because I just liked looking at her.
Sure.
So shallow, right? But listen, it's I was reaching at times in this movie.
Adam Risky and I were making the joke about I made the joke with him that Abbey Cornish had spent all of her smiles in Sucker Punch.
Where she didn't smile at all.
Oh, see, that's, she spent all of them.
She's a weird, like, Sienna Miller doppelganger, but I just enjoyed looking at her in this movie, and that's not fair. And for the character that they had her playing, it didn't make any sense that she would be as made up as she was, because she's at home with her son.
Right. Did she have a job? I don't know if she has
a
job.
I don't know. Yeah.
It probably
and she's
matter.
Just grieving her husband, who's just a head and lungs, and yet she still has professional makeup and like these incredible clothes.
Maybe she's a fashion model.
Perhaps.
The future is different. Maybe clothing.
That should have been spelled out. Yep. The Samuel Jackson stuff, and Samuel Jackson throughout the movie plays this sort of Bill O'Reilly character who is trying to get America to adopt robot police, you know, as part of his agenda. And that to me seems like the stuff where they really were trying to get at some of the satire that existed in the Verhoeven movie.
Sure.
But it's really not satire, except to say, like, oh, he's kind of like Bill O'Reilly.
Yeah.
But that's not satire because it's not commenting on
Bill
O'Reilly in any way. He's just sort of a stand-in. That's not satire.
I think it was just pointing out it felt, and this is, I wondered as I was watching it, that I wonder if this is, I don't want to just put this at the feet of the director, but that's, okay, Jose Padilla is from a different country.
Right.
And so I wonder if this is like a person who's not from the United States, their conception of what our silly news shows are like.
Maybe.
You know, because it just felt like it looked like a news show would look, but it just felt there was something missing because it didn't, like you were saying, it didn't feel like satire. It just felt like, hey, this is a thing that exists.
Right. Well, the message seemed to be the satirical message, if you will, like that the media and even sometimes the quote unquote news has plays a role in corporate interests.
Sure.
Well, no kidding.
Right.
Like, as soon as TV
started
selling commercial time, that's been the case. Right. So you're not blowing our minds with that one, RoboCop remake, but that's as close as the movie comes to a satirical statement. Again, it's not required to have satire.
Yeah.
It's just that that is such a part of the original that we come into a remake sort of expecting that. Yeah. And it, like everything else, it sort of half-asses it. It's like, oh, this was in the original. We better put some of this in here.
I feel like we should have this.
Right, but we're not really going to commit to it because our interests lie elsewhere.
And also, we don't know how to write it.
No, definitely
don't know
not.
How to present it.
Right.
And I don't know. I like how all of Sam Jackson's delivery was sort of like the end of every sentence was like eyebrow arch.
Yeah. Right, well,
don't you think this? I'm like, that's not, well, is that really what the news is?
The thing is, Sam Jackson like kind of phones it in for everything now, and it bums me out. Because then he'll do something like Django Unchained, and you're like, oh, that's what it looks like when he's trying and when he creates.
Well, that's for Quentin. So
a really cool character, because you go back and you rewatch Pulp Fiction when nobody knew who Sam Jackson was and you didn't know what his shtick was.
Sure.
And it was like watching somebody turn into a movie star in the span of one movie because you couldn't look away and you just watch him and you say, oh my God, who is that guy? And he had done stuff before. You know, he was in Spike Lee movies and stuff, but he was a revelation in that movie. And then he's basically given that performance in every movie since. And he doesn't bring anything to this part except he's Sam Jackson saying those lines. I guess that's his big contribution.
Agree. Are there other things that
What did
I
you think
like?
Of Joel Kinnaman? I'm not familiar with him. I haven't seen the Easy Money movies. I didn't watch The Killing.
Yeah, I haven't either. I thought he was okay.
Yeah.
There just wasn't a ton that he had to do. Obviously, he's heavily in prosthetics and, you know, in a head, in a face covering as well.
Right.
I kind of, I really liked, again, to go back to the partner cop stuff, I liked him and Omar doing things.
Yeah.
I think he's not American, right? I don't.
No, I believe that is correct.
Okay, and so I really liked his sort of like urban
fake American accent.
No, his like urban white guy. I speak the language of the streets, like that little you know, his little city speak. Like I thought he did fine with his dialogue when he had to. Like when he was doing the cop stuff, I sort of liked it. But I don't know. He sort of has to play the whole movie kind of like, I'm a soulless robot. And so there just isn't a lot to do. I thought he was okay. But
he's Swedish. I'm sorry. I was looking it up.
Swedish. I don't think he like makes or breaks it.
That's the thing. Yeah, he's fine. But he's not what's wrong with the movie.
Sure.
But he's also not so great that you say, well, the movie wasn't very good, but oh man, at the center there's this performance by Joel Kinnaman, right?
Right.
And I tend to agree with you. I think if he would have been allowed to just keep making the movie about him and Omar the cops, that would be so much better. Because again, this movie just keeps, I forgot about the Jackie Earl Haley character.
Sure.
I forgot about the police captain character who shows up.
Oh yeah. Disappears.
Pretty
quickly.
Soon we're gonna have to get into spoilers, because I think some more of what's wrong with the movie. But is there anything else that you wanted to add before we start talking spoilers?
Not necessarily. I thought just, I don't know. I thought it was okay.
Not the worst. And that's the best I get. You know,
again,
we all,
not the best.
Right. But, all go into it, I think, expecting a disaster.
Sure.
And I don't think it's a disaster. I think it has a couple things on its mind. I think some of the scenes work. I think Jose Padilla kind of did the best he could.
And should
think,
be allowed to make some other movies.
Yes, and
I
not
hope he
remakes.
Continues to,
yeah,
right.
Let him make a, just a straight, you know, cop movie, or let him go back and make more interesting movies at home. Because if we're only interested in him as a director for hire, I don't think we're ever going to see what he's capable of,
sure,
at least in the United States. I think it's a huge mess, and I think some of it is really, really dumb. But I think some of it is also at least well-intentioned.
Yeah.
And if that is the best I can say about a mercenary remake of a classic, then I guess that's not so bad, right?
Right.
All right. So you can keep listening if you don't care about having the remake of RoboCop spoiled. The thing about Michael Keaton is, I think he's good.
Sure.
And I just feel like in the last 20 minutes, the movie realizes like, oh, we got to make him the villain out of nowhere. And so then he's making...
Yeah.
He's pointing guns at people, and
right,
the movie didn't earn that. I think you can make him a villain in terms of he's the guy who's responsible for this, and he can still get his comeuppance by having his program fail or having him exposed for potentially criminal activity.
Sure.
And have his, you know, business ruined or whatever. I don't think he needs to be pointing guns at people on rooftops and being shot by RoboCop.
Yeah, I agree. I think, oh gosh, just he's at first you sort of are sympathetic. We're in spoilers now, right? Okay, just
we
be,
are.
We're
I
especially
Michael Keaton got shot by RoboCop.
Da, da, da.
Except I was spoiling Multiplicity.
That would have
not
made
see
that movie
that ending
so
coming.
Great.
Yeah, right.
Wow. I think that. There's some work in the first part of the movie that sort of makes him a little bit sympathetic, right? That he's just trying to do this thing, that I'm just trying to make some money. I'm just trying to, like, let's make it
but
work,
he also
whatever
seems
you need to do.
To believe,
sure,
that the world would be safer.
Right.
He does seem to believe that. And,
right.
And so that does, while maybe not sympathetic, we don't believe him to be evil.
It seems
he's not
less,
just financially driven.
Yeah,
it doesn't seem like.
It seems less ruthless than Jay Baruchel and the other woman who's the
right,
marketing people.
Right.
And like, there's something so cynical about them saying like, well, he tested really well in this test audience, and then prisoners really
were
afraid
good
of him.
That's a Baruchel.
Oh, wait. No, I wasn't trying to. That was just my
I
nerdy.
Know. I thought that was kind of
it was just my nerdy voice.
Unless you were doing the woman.
Oh, my gosh. Now I'm trying to, and I can't even remember what her voice is. I have to pretend to be Andrea Riseborough.
Yeah.
So
that's what this movie was missing.
Yeah. But I think those marketing characters have like they sort of carry the weight of being like this ruthless cutthroat
right.
people
right,
of, like
right.
90% approval. It's like it's right. so cynical, right?
Right.
And so he's just more like, oh, okay, well, we'll make that work. There's just he's just trying to make a buck.
And the fact that the movie does really go out of its way to make Gary Oldman a sympathetic character, and the fact that Gary Oldman continues to go along with it,
sure.
makes us think, okay, maybe it's not the worst, right?
Right.
If this guy who we like and who we believe in is willing to go along with Michael Keaton, there's got to be something there, right?
Sure.
So Michael Keaton isn't just this mustache twirling villain.
Right. And because we're funding Gary Oldman's research in
right.
other ways, that he's
right.
helping people who have really lost their
he's
limbs.
Helping people play the guitar
right.
who can no longer play the guitar.
Oh, by the way, oh my God. Gosh,
but if their emotions take over.
That's exactly where I was going.
But then that doesn't really play a part later with RoboCop.
I want to kill somebody.
You assume that that's setting up a thing with RoboCop where like
right.
his emotions take over and then he loses control.
It short circuits, isn't it? Right.
But that doesn't happen.
No. No, not at all.
That's bad screenwriting.
That it really is. That killed me because so the guitar player is playing. He's like, "Well, I have to play with emotion, or
that
like, things don't work."
That was one of the 10 most groan-worthy lines in
yeah.
the movie.
Well, there's so many parts where just in that first marketing meeting of the 10,000 marketing meetings are in this stupid movie. It's just, oh God. All right, anyway. Where
I love how you wait till we get into spoilers and then you just let
look,
the movie
I'm
have
just
it.
So, like, I just want to give it a chance.
The
but
first
this...
part of the podcast, you're like, no, it's not the worst.
Right.
And now we're in spoilers and you're like, oh, it's so stupid.
Look,
I'm getting all worked up.
Right, it's a third act change, everyone. and then he's just talking about, I lost my train of thought. What are we talking about?
I use my emotions to play,
right.
guitar player.
So that stuff. And then all this emotional stuff. And the first marketing meeting where Michael
yeah.
Keaton is talking about, but no, how does it feel? How did it feel? Like he's talking about,
right.
we need to do something that feels. I'm like,
right.
really? That's the only thing we're looking for? Because that's what makes us a human being, because I feel things?
Yes.
Like, that's so dumb.
Yes.
That is such a horrible minimalism of just, no, it's way more complicated than that.
Well, see,
that's why you have a scientist doing it, remember?
And a big part of the problem for me was that it didn't find a way into the material because the movie kind of does need to make a case where we as an audience become convinced that maybe the world would be safer with robots,
sure.
and then show us that no, it wouldn't. Like, again, the first one works because it presents this fascist police state
right.
where this robot is the only answer. And we're like, yeah, of course it's the only answer because the streets are rampant with crime. And so we all willingly accept a fascist robot cop as our hero.
Yep.
This movie presents a world in which the government is saying, no, I'm not so sure. Which is a position that we all already agree with.
Right.
There's no disconnect.
Sure.
So what are they presenting us with that we don't already... What is the drama where we're like, no, yeah, we kind of agree with the senator. We're not so sure. And then it presents a world in which, yeah, we're not so sure. I just
yeah.
felt like it failed to take a position that was unique. It just reflected what I would assume we all already agree with.
Yeah, that we don't like Iron Man. There is Iron Man 7. There is the part about the feeling, like he's so over, like the emotions are like this sort of shorthand for like why Alex Murphy is better than a robot.
Right.
But then it gets to the so just straight to the end where it's like the final confrontation between
right.
RoboCop and bad Michael Keaton. And then it's got this conceit that it can't, it's from kind of from the original, which is fine, it's still a good idea, that it can't shoot, like the RoboCop can't shoot the officers of the company
right.
that makes him or
right.
whatever, but then he does,
right,
and there's really zero explanation.
Yeah,
literally zero explanation. He
yeah.
just like does,
right, he can't, but then he can
through the power
the
of
end.
Love,
right. Yeah.
Like, ugh.
No, and again, in the first movie, it's very clever because it's about a corporation trying to protect its own interests.
Sure.
And it's a punchline because when he says, Dick, you're fired, RoboCop says, thank you. And then he's able
Ba-boom.
To kill the bad
right.
guy. And it's great.
And it's an explanation.
Because RoboCop is the best movie ever.
Yeah. And it's all very clear.
Yes.
That's what happened.
Yes.
This, okay, it's fine. Like, okay, fine. You have RoboCop shoot Michael Keaton. Fine.
Right.
Give us the explanation
right.
at least a little bit
Michael
afterwards.
Keaton says, you can't shoot me. And then he can shoot him.
And then it's done.
Right.
it's over. Here's what I think is even funnier. Just to show how much this doesn't make any sense. Michael Keaton, on top of that, they're on top of a building, right?
Of course.
Has a guard with him.
Right.
And then the guard watches RoboCop shoot Michael Keaton.
Right.
And then he just stands there.
Yes.
And then in the sort of the helicopter shot over the building as the movie is ending, Abby Cornish is tending to RoboCop, and the guard, I was specifically looking for the guard, he just sort of walks away. I'm like, what's your job? It doesn't. Why were you even there? It was kind of awesome.
The movie does that a couple times, because there's a whole section in the middle where it takes one of, I think, the worst, maybe not even one of the worst, RoboCop 2, you still haven't seen, right?
No, because no one's really convinced me that I should.
No, well, you should, because one day we'll do a podcast on it, because it's a mess. Okay,
well, that's a good reason.
But it's an interesting mess.
Okay.
There's a whole section, this isn't a spoiler, where all of Murphy is taken away, and he's just this super compliant robot.
Sure.
And the movie does that for a section. Like, they took away this one idea from RoboCop 2 and thought, well, let's include that, where they take away all of the emotions, even though the emotions never really played a part.
Right.
All of a sudden they're like, no, 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 get rid of all of them. And he's just this robot.
Right.
And then he just stops being that because the emotions take over. Again, there's zero explanation.
Right.
They take away all of his humanity and then he gets it back, I guess, because you can't fight the human spirit.
Sure.
Because he has a soul.
Because of the ghost in his shell.
Right.
No, I don't know.
She says with an eye roll. And it's, again, it's not explained. It's just the movie becomes this other thing for 10 minutes where he ignores his family. He ignores his partner. He's just this soulless robot cop. And then he goes back to being Alex Murphy when it suits the plot.
Yeah.
Because Abby Cornish shows up randomly and says, like, you have to come home. And then he wants to.
Yeah, that's it. Because
I would overcome my programming for Abby Cornish, but this movie does not explain.
That's okay. It doesn't. Right. We're owed an explanation. also to watch hockey with my kid.
he recorded all the games.
He did. And that's the character that he is. He's
that's
a hockey
it.
Kid.
Yeah. He just wants to watch hockey with his robot dad.
He's a human being. Okay. Oh gosh, this movie. It's fantastic. So the feeling stuff. What the other thing I wanted what I kept on thinking about was just other movies that this could have been, but still have been a RoboCop like remake. The movie I kept on thinking about, and maybe you thought about this too, was Dredd.
Interesting.
Yeah, the one that came out in 2012.
Dredd is a better RoboCop remake.
It is.
Than the RoboCop remake.
Like, if it went in that direction, and it couldn't, I guess it couldn't have because they already made Dredd, but like, it's sort of the same thing.
Yeah.
Sort of emotionless,
right?
Extremely controlled main character.
Right.
Sort of an approach.
As the only possible solution to a world spun out of control.
Right. Him doing very, and there's still enough like sort of mystery in that. Well, I'm not going to spoil Dredd for those of you who haven't seen it. I rewatched that one too. I find that movie eminently
rewatchable. You talking about it makes me want to rewatch it.
I want to rewatch
actually.
It. We're going to go rewatch it right now. Bye. And then it's just sort of just like he's still sort of robotic in a certain kind of way that he's sort of emotionless. We don't know where he comes from.
Right.
Like he's the sort of perfect answer. He's a perfect cop, that sort of thing.
Right.
That movie had sort of the appropriate level of violence that I think
in terms of matching Verhoeven. Original, yeah.
Like, look, that's why you need this. You have to show that level of violence. Not that I take joy in that, but to make it necessary for a character like this to exist.
Exactly.
If everything's fine, then you don't need this guy.
Right.
We're okay. Then
he's a last resort.
Right. Then you're back to Demolition Man. You just have those guys with like the.
Would also rather watch Demolition Man than the RoboCop remake.
But it's again like that movie was sort of again set in the future. It's more action oriented. It's
not
about like the existential level, the existential nature of Dredd necessarily.
Right.
And I just sort of wished it was that movie. I'm like, that would have worked if they did this.
You are 100. I stand by.
Oh, man.
Dredd is a better RoboCop remake than RoboCop remake.
Another part, the horror. We're in spoilers. So
yes.
I want to talk some about the horror movie parts of it that was sort of terrifying. So the body stuff.
Yeah.
Where it's just his throat. And,
yeah.
Oh, God, that was so gross.
And a pair of lungs expanding
lung
and contracting.
And his right hand.
Right.
Which, why'd you,
that's
why'd
what
you
they say.
Keep that?
Again, amazing special effects.
Yeah.
Look what we can do now.
Looked awesome.
Unbelievable. What is
the point?
I mean, listen, I think it serves a function in terms of showing just how decimated his body was, how this suit is keeping him alive. It asks us, okay, is he still a man? If yeah. he's literally just a brain stem and lungs, is that still a human being? And since the movie claims to be about questions of, yeah. you know, humanity and free will, sure, okay. My objection has more to do with A, I don't want to see that, and B, right. this movie is PG-13.
Sure. I really like that point. That was one of the points I wanted to bring up of what's the minimum amount of person
right.
that
right.
you can be but still be a person. I'm like, right. oh, that's really cool.
Right. Again, the movie does nothing with it. Nothing.
Not going to go on, whatever. Like, what if...
because you could... it's more about this corporation.
This corporation that just is whatever.
Whose story is this? Yeah. Is this Omnicorp's story or is this Alex Murphy's story? And the movie seems more interested in the Omnicorp story.
Sure. Right.
But it keeps pretending to be more about Alex Murphy, and I feel like it needs to
right.
make a choice.
I'm also not necessarily convinced... I don't think that the movie convinces us that RoboCop is better than the other robots, necessarily.
No, never.
I don't think so.
It never makes a case for why we would need to put a man inside the suit, except to placate the American public, which we sort of get via one montage
sure.
where he's revealed and then spots a guy who's been free for 20 sure. years and immediately wins over the American public
because he shoots catches, a guy
right.
in public.
Yeah, right. He catches one well, bad guy and now we're all won over. But yeah, no, it never makes a case for why it never makes a case for the necessity of that emotional component, yeah. the ability to reason and make choices versus what the robot drones do, because sure. the robot drones are shown in the beginning to kill a kid.
Right.
At the same time, it recognizes the kid as being a threat.
Right. It has a knife.
It doesn't just kill an innocent kid. I mean, right. I might not agree with killing a kid, but I also don't agree with what the kid is doing because he's... Right. part of a terrorist
sure.
cell who are publicly martyring themselves
yeah.
to show that they don't want to be policed by robots.
Sure.
Okay. You know, you all raise an interesting point, but the movie goes out of its way. You know, I thought for sure that the reporter mm-hmm. who Jackie Earl Haley puts that, I forget what it's called, the red asset. A red asset, red yes, asset. Which is what Michael Keaton has that RoboCop can just automatically override.
Sure.
He puts it on the reporter and says, you'll be fine. You're a red asset. You're not going to get hurt. And I thought for sure, okay, we're going to see this reporter die on TV
right.
so that we can see that the there debris. Are flaws in the system.
Sure. Yeah.
Right? No, reporter's nope. fine.
She's fine.
The robots are kind of doing their job. Yeah, like,
they're doing again, pretty good.
The movie keeps presenting us with things that we're like, yeah, okay, I agree with that. And that's not drama necessarily. I don't know.
We agree. I think some other interesting ideas to go along with the government thing was that, and I think this is a lot of dialogue that wasn't groundworthy, was it's talking about like a robot, a machine that can investigate its own
right.
crime.
Right.
Which, you know what, that wasn't necessarily...
Oh my gosh, that line was super groundworthy. You're not talking about like...
Oh, no, just the idea. I don't... The
what,
line
what
is
murder is he investigating? His own? Or I don't remember what the line was.
Oh, no, it was just the line. I think it's like the ridiculous. Idea behind the line.
Sure.
So I was thinking about like, oh, that would be... And like that idea is present in the original movie too. So I don't know why I'm so like 20 years later like thinking,
right.
oh, it's really great. But it is really great thinking about how here's a machine that can just instigate its own investigations and do whatever and like... They're, I think in the movie, they're even talking about, like, think how dangerous it would be if you had a machine cop sort of investigating your own government dealings.
Right.
That's not good. And again, I was like, that's an interesting direction.
Right. Because, again, that original movie is about this corporation protecting its own interests. And this movie isn't, except for at the end when he's like, I'm a red asset. And then he
sure.
gets killed anyway.
Right.
Bloodlessly, of course.
Yeah. And again, another interesting idea that kind of didn't go anywhere. What'd you think about would they turn him into a much more efficient... Okay, they're doing the...
This is the sequence where they take away all his emotions?
Right, they're like, just turn down his dopamine level
right.
or whatever it was.
Right.
I don't know, what'd you think about that like idea that... It's what Gary Oldman spells out. He's like, well, we give him the appearance of free will,
right.
but he actually isn't. It's just a computer telling Alex that he's... I don't know, what'd you think about that idea as a...
I thought it's an okay idea.
Sure.
So this is before they take away all his dopamine levels. This is in that training sequence?
Yeah, it's when Michael Keaton tells Gary Oldman, like, look, you got to make this work somehow. He's got to be he's got to be just as efficient as the robots. Because before...
So he's essentially, at that point, just a program.
Sure.
But there's a man inside who thinks he's doing these things. Listen, that's an interesting sort of philosophical question that it's raising. It literally raises it for the duration of one training sequence and then has no interest in exploring that disconnect at any point during the movie. And so I can't really give it credit just for raising the question.
Sure.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. I think it just ends up...
Prometheus was the movie that... And I'm not randomly... When Prometheus came out, all these people were like, oh, but it raises so many questions. Like, where did we come from? Okay, great. Literally just saying where did we come from doesn't count as being thoughtful.
Right.
You have to actually explore that idea. Sure. And so for RoboCop to just raise the point, it doesn't get points just for asking that question. They have to do something with it.
Sometimes raising questions provides more problems.
Yeah, exactly.
Because now... Because then the easy
you're on the hook to deal with that.
Now the solution is like, oh, wait, you can just turn them off and on then, basically? Well, what's the problem?
Right.
You've got the on-off switch.
And the remake's solution to all of the questions it raises is to abandon them by turning into another movie 10 minutes later.
Right.
And so for 10 minutes now, he has to go after fake Clarence Boddicker. And then he wipes out all those guys. And we're like, well, what do we do? Oh, shit, we're out of bad guys? Well, make Michael Keaton the bad guy. Okay, great.
Bring in Abby Cornish.
Now I got to... Yeah, right. She randomly shows... And the choices, again, not to once again invoke Prometheus, because RoboCop and Prometheus don't have that many similarities. But Prometheus was a movie where you sit there and you get so angry at the stupidity of the choices that the characters make.
Yeah.
When they decide to pet the little alien snake. You're like, that's so dumb. Why would you do that? It immediately takes you out of the movie. So we get to the end where Abby Cornish is told she has to leave the building because they know RoboCop is coming. And then she says, I want to go talk to him. Why does she make that choice?
Why wouldn't you just leave?
That doesn't make any sense. Nope. She was walking out. It only exists so that she could be taken to the top of the building and held at gunpoint by Michael Keaton.
Right. Who's going to get shot by the guy that he shouldn't get shot by.
You can't have characters making idiotic, nonsensical choices and then expect us to still give them our sympathy.
Another thing I wanted to bring up. Agree. Another thing I wanted to bring up.
Thank you. Thank you. Thanks for throwing that out.
You're welcome. I felt like I brought it up. I should finish it or something.
Okay. No, then you'd be the RoboCop remake.
Robo. This is a weird, like, smaller thing. I don't know. Because I kept on thinking of other movies I wanted this to be. Like, I wanted this to be something like Dread, something action-oriented.
Right.
That would have made so much more sense instead of marketing-oriented. So I was sort of thinking about, in terms of the action, I felt like it didn't make any... even the action didn't really make a lot of sense to me.
Okay.
Not in terms of how it was filmed, but just sort of like, I felt like RoboCop took too many hits, right?
Oh,
he's constantly just like walking through. He just gets shot all the damn time.
Right.
I'm like, dude, you're a robot, right?
Right.
So you can avoid this, right? He's got this little heads up
display. Right.
Shouldn't he be able to avoid all this stuff? There's the one part where he's taken down like the main drug dealer.
The fake band. Clarence Boddicker.
Sure.
Yeah.
And then he takes down his gang and they all have like the kind of bullet that's the kind of bullet that he can't take.
Which Jackie Earle Haley flat out says earlier in the movie.
Sure.
Like, you can still get shot and killed.
Right.
Just because you're a robot.
Right. It'll shut you down.
Right.
He just goes through that and he takes all these bullet hits.
Yeah.
I'm like, God, it doesn't make any sense.
Right.
He's RoboCop.
Because this movie isn't concerned with what happened 10 minutes ago. It reinvents itself every 10 minutes. And so the things that came before no longer apply. We're this movie now.
Right.
And so it just ignores everything that came before it just for the sake of sort of living in the moment, for lack of a better expression.
I just wanted the action to be a little bit different. I was afraid, and I just kind of fell into this, unfortunately, of that the action would just turn into something either unrealistic or something that just wouldn't make any sense. I didn't like that he took so many hits. I didn't like that he was so slow all the time.
Okay.
I guess if he was faster, it wouldn't make any sense because he's supposed to be this big metal suit, right?
Right.
You can't make him super fast. The physics of that is kind of too... It would seem a little bit too unrealistic, but he just took too many shots, and it just wasn't... I even thought this in the first RoboCop, or the original RoboCop, that I'm like, wait, he's... like you've got all this computer stuff in your head. This right. is always my thing about like artificial, like whatever intelligence, like fighting. I'm like, shouldn't those things be really accurate? Because it's a computer.
Right, right, right.
I think a computer, I haven't shot a lot of guns. Spoiler, everybody. I haven't shot a lot of guns. I haven't had my brain and my lungs and throat and my right hand removed to be put into a machine. But I feel like a computer would be way more accurate
right.
in firing and shooting right. and avoiding getting killed.
Right.
But no, robot guys, whatever. He just right. sort of just like it makes sense when Iron Man does that because he's right. still a dude.
Right. Right. Right.
And he's just more sort of makes it. Also, his armor is supposed to be, you know, not to get super nerdy as I push up my glasses. But his armor is sort of designed to take more punishment.
Right.
When they say a specific thing of like, no, you can't take more than this sort of damage, okay? And then he just does. And it's like, okay, well, that's kind of disappointing.
Right.
Like,
or get us to the point where he does take that amount of damage and then show us what happened. This movie just keeps introducing the gun in the drawer and then never produces the gun ever. Right. It keeps setting things up that as movie watchers, we say, oh, okay, that's foreshadowing. That's a thing that's going to pay off. And none of these things ever pay off. And to your point about him being too slow, to me, he's both too slow and too fast.
Sure.
Like, he's too slow to be sort of a reinvention of RoboCop, sort of a faster, you know, the running right. zombies of the Zack Snyder Dawn of the Dead. Like, they don't reinvent him in that way, but he's also too fast to be, again, the movie can't really make a choice because one of the appealing things about the Verhoeven original is the slowness of the RoboCop design. And part of that is because Rob Bottin's suit felt like it weighed hundreds of pounds.
Yeah.
And the guy was just a tank. And some of that is just the advantage of practical effects versus CGI. Because as soon as you can do anything with CGI, there's less weight to it. There's less gravity to it. You don't get the feeling of this machine taking hits. It's just a computer drawing that bounces around a couple times.
Right.
And like you had said, you know, there aren't very many action scenes. The one where he takes out all the bad guys happens mostly sort of in the dark and sort of a strobe situation.
Yeah.
And before that, it's him against a bunch of drones. So it's just a CGI nothing. There's no stakes. So none of the action beats really work. You know, you can't say like, well, the movie's kind of slow, kind of boring, kind of talky. But it's got these great couple of action scenes. It doesn't really even have that.
Right, which is unfortunate. I guess we're winding down here a little bit, but one sort of hallucinatory fantasy I sort of had was if they took the like his brain stem and lungs and whatever, and they just put that in a different body,
okay.
I thought that would have been awesome. That wouldn't make any sense, right? It's about the marketing of like it's a man in front of the machine. But I kind of wanted it to go. And this is just kind of wishful thinking. But
no, you're just writing a better movie in your head. That's
you know,
fine.
That's
what we do.
We do that
watch
all the time
bad movies
with Ronnie Lake. that they took Ronnie Lake's brains and lungs. No,
all right.
They took RoboCop's like his brain or whatever, and they just put it in like a different body. Like they put it in one of those Ed 209 bodies, or they put it in something else. And
okay.
Like, well, that's sort of interesting because
RoboCop
sort of, like,
do. RoboCop 2 kind of does that.
Oh, okay. Like, he becomes a sort of reversible, like, just mix and match, like,
right.
Barbie doll, like, whatever. Just put whatever you want on him, sort of thing.
Okay.
I was like, that would have been kind of cool.
Yeah, RoboCop 2 kind of does that. RoboCop 2, except it's a villain. It takes this evil drug dealer named Kane and sort of puts him inside, his brain inside, like, an Ed 209.
Oh. Are there any good guys named Kane, by the way? I feel like there are bad guys, unfortunately.
No, yeah, there is. There totally is. It's something I just watched.
Is it Solomon Kane?
No, it's the guy's name is like Jack Kane. Oh, it's I Come in Peace, the movie we were literally talking about before we started recording. I'm almost positive Dolph Lundgren's name in that movie is Jack Kane.
Nice.
He is a good guy.
I take it all back.
He's a hero.
Mrs. Kane. Take it all back.
Yeah, I guess we should wrap up on the RoboCop remake, unless did you have other things that you wanted
to... No, that was really it. I felt like this could have been better.
It's a movie that like we could talk about for a long time, but basically all we're doing is talking about what's wrong with it, all the ways that it comes up short, all the bad choices that it makes, and that's not fun. I would rather sit around and talk about like, oh, and I liked this, and wasn't this cool?
Absolutely.
And the only positive thing I can say about the movie is that it does attempt to be its own thing.
Yeah.
And that is a positive, but I don't have anything else that I can point to and say, oh, this worked or this is good. Like you said, the Gary Oldman performance is pretty good. Michael Keaton is enjoyable. Abby Cornish is pretty. The movie looks fine, you know? Like, I don't...
Right.
I didn't feel like it was particularly stylish. I didn't see it and really get a feeling for what a Jose Padilla movie looks like.
Right.
But I was never distracted by, you know,
sure,
tacky choices or anything like that. It all looks slick and fine. It's just the script is a mess.
Right. So what you're saying is that Detroit is not going to erect a statue of Joel Kinnaman as RoboCop.
I don't think so. They got that sweet Peter Weller statue, and they're good. Really, everybody should just, if you've never seen the original RoboCop, certainly rectify that. And if you have, just rewatch that one instead of going to see the remake. Take my word for it.
Or watch Dread.
Or watch Dread. That is a great point. Dread is that's my takeaway from this podcast. Dread is a better RoboCop
Let's
remake.
Let's go watch it.
I'm totally going to watch it tonight.
Yeah, I think so. It's on Netflix streaming.
Is it?
Yeah.
I have the Blu-ray, so I'm just going to watch that.
Sounds good.
And have a good time. Anyway, thank you guys for listening. Thank you, Mark, for doing this RoboCop remake.
Thanks
podcast.
For having me. I love ruining the 80s. It's fantastic. Let's continue doing it.
Just going to keep happening, everybody. Real quick plug for our friend Heather Wixon, too, if you've made it this far into the podcast and you are LA-based or going to be in LA at the end of March. March 28th, 29th, and 30th at Jump Cut Cafe in near Hollywood, Los Angeles. I'm not totally sure where it is. Heather Wixon organizes her own horror film festival called Cine Mayhem.
Oh, nice.
This year, she's got John Carpenter coming for a showing of The Fog.
Holy cow.
She's,
does she know? She knows people.
She's legit, man. Hey. She's got Robert Ressler coming for a screening of Vamp. And then on that's, I believe, on Saturday. And then on Sunday, they're doing a screening of Hellraiser. And they're having a showing of original Clive Barker artwork that he is loaning out for the purposes of the festival. The festival is free. You just need to get tickets ahead of time. So check out Cine Mayhem online, or you can follow, I think, at Cine Mayhem on Twitter for details on that. But Heather's our friend, and so we want to give a plug to her festival.
Absolutely.
It's going to be a hot ticket, so I hope
get on it.
People are able to go. Yeah, I'm super jealous of those of you who get to go. My birthday is actually that weekend, and that would have been an awesome way to celebrate, watching The Fog with John Carpenter in attendance at Jump Cut Cafe, which is a place I hear about all the time because I listen to Killer POV, and I really want to go there. But if you're out in California, you should absolutely go and tell them if this movie sent you.
Nice.
Thank you guys for listening. Mark, do you have any final words?
No. Let's stop making remakes. Let's make something better. Let's make something better. Let's stop ruining the 80s.
You know what?
What?
I'd buy that for $1.
Oh, God.